Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Angela.
This is Books Are Good, actually. And for once in like about almost a year and a half, we're actually like in the same room. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. So sorry for the late recording, but
we apologize for nothing.
Yeah. Well, all right. I apologize, but Jimmy apologizes for nothing.
You
that's
will
fine.
Take your slop.
We just had COVID issues and actually that's about it. That's the thing. And also we really needed some extra time to read this fucking book or listen to it.
Yes. So if I sound different or I'm clearing my throat a lot or you hear me make weird mouth noises or throat noises, blame my company for getting me sick with COVID.
There you go. So, that's what happened. But you know what, listeners? We did a great thing. It's called We Finished the Fucking Book.
We
finished this book called Hegemony and Socialist Strategy Towards a Radical Democratic Politics.
And now we have our first struggle session, which is it hegemony or is it hegemony?
I heard it both ways, probably from two different historical, you know, professors. Mm-hmm. And... Mm-hmm. So we're going to do it both ways, and some of us are going to, we're saying the same thing. It's not too different. It's like lieutenant and lieutenant. It's a pretty obvious that we're talking about some person in the military.
Why was there never any right tenant?
I don't know. Hmm. Maybe some Romans, like maybe a Roman
Why
commander.
Why wasn't there a rue-tenant?
Rue-tenant? I don't know. This book is by Ernesto Laclau and Chantal Mouffe.
Chantal.
So,
and I think it's Mouf.
Mouf? Okay. Well, already fucking up.
They're French.
Okay. Well, I have some respect for French. Anyway, this is probably going to be more a free-form conversation. We really don't have any questions besides, do you agree? Yes, no. And that would be very boring. So, I guess first off, in terms of, let's just start with impressions of kind of the book. I guess I'll go first. So I knew this book was going to be a problem when I opened to the introduction and read the first paragraph and was very confused. So I was like, cool, I'm in for a struggle session with this fucking book. I felt like chapter one and chapter two were essentially we're showing our work type of chapters. Chapter three was kind of like, all right, so now we're sort of bringing it together. And then chapter four is like, okay, here's our examples of that. Overall, I think what was frustrating to kind of deal with is the sometimes not remembering like what were other folks' arguments, like other Marxist writers' arguments, even though we did read some of them this year. We read Rosa
Lenin, but I don't think we read State and Revolution, which I don't think he really goes in on like hegemony at all.
No, he does not. And, you know, so, and then we didn't, like, even though, like, Bernstein's mentioned in, like, Rosenberg stuff, we didn't really, like, read his stuff to really understand why he came to the conclusion he did, which is wrong, but the fact that, you know, we didn't fully read it, like, what was
the
context. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, you know, so they were brought up, and I'm like, okay, I remember some of these things, but it was just very difficult to kind of get around to it. So once they stopped kind of, like, referencing them at chapter one, chapter two was a bit easier to kind of understand, kind of like there was still
we're dealing with Gramsci then.
Which we haven't even touched on at all. And I also forgot that he was, you know, also part of the, you know, socialist thought. So yeah, that was just very difficult to get through. Like the first two chapters. Chapter three was a bit easier because they started bringing, you know, topics of like, okay, so I'm going to bring up the these definitions and how do they relate to like the subject and like the object and how like feminism and kind of trying to relate to how or trying to use feminism as an example of how you would debate like feminism and things like that. And then chapter four kind of sort of brought that more in together. I thought the part about how conservatives pretty much make new definitions and essentially make new realities in order to push for their ideological, you know, policies and things like that. I thought that was really good and actually like a really like very well laid out example of like how the left could use the same type of tactics that way instead of, you know, most people are like, oh, okay, right-wing tactics is, you know, just kind of being bigoted and yada, 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 which is like, yeah, right. But like, obviously don't fucking do that the opposite way. But like, yeah, you need to kind of force a new reality onto people so that they can kind of get into that type of thing or create new definitions of things and then hold to those definitions. So, cause that's what everybody else did when like the civil rights or women's rights was you guys said that equality of man, but that's not true based on how our laws and everything works out. So pushing for a new reality is a, you know, trying to essentially making the definition, the actual definition or expanding it. That part made sense to me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, can I speak to a lot of other parts of this book? Probably not that well. So, you know, yeah, I think, it's a, if I was a graduate of political science, this book would probably make a lot more sense if I was very much into that. But this was very, this just kind of reminded me of a lot of the one political science class that was like 300 level and I was very lost and I like really struggled through that class until I had to like super focus on what the fuck my teacher wanted. So yeah, just reminded me of that.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. It is what it is. It's, you know, it was like, this is a, I was happy to complete the book because it was a challenging book and I didn't want to shy away from it, but boy howdy, we need to take a fucking break from this shit for at least like a month.
Couple months,
yeah.
Do you think Zizek's lesson nothing was harder?
Yes, actually.
Okay. Now, having read this, and Arrighi is another post-Marxist, how would you feel about returning to Arrighi at some point in the future?
I think Arrighi was a little bit easier to understand because there's a very easy logical steps and like some math to it. Like it was a very easy to kind of follow. See, I think the thing is Arrighi and even Zizek have kind of a narrative flow to their things. This is more of like, all right, we're going to take even a further step back.
Yeah, this is really just pure philosophy.
Yeah, pure philosophy, which I just haven't really been in, like, I haven't been, like, reading any of that. And even if I did, it was probably very basic type of philosophy and also very, like, here's a paragraph, you know, maybe here's, like, two pages of something from,
Locke. Rousseau, yeah. Or, you know, some Plato or Aristotle. Or
yeah, exactly.
What have you. So, yeah, I also struggled with this book, chapters one and chapters two. So chapter one, yeah, is like going over like not just like doing like showing their work, but more like showing that prior Marxist philosophers failed to properly articulate their own works.
Yes.
So like I feel like the overarching point of this book is to establish in using the language and philosophy that Marxist philosophers have used that Marxism cannot be true because there is no universal subject. And without a universal subject, we cannot anchor all of society around class struggles. And that also then refutes the base superstructure argument as well.
Yeah, and also want to point out this book also kind of proved class reductionism just it's already like bad enough but it's just kind of like yeah it can just it's in a way like a kind of like a myth like in a way right mm-hmm. like just never was so we can't we can't have class reductionism because there was never really like a class
a non-class reductionist view of reality, because Marxism is unfortunately class reductionism. So yeah, chapter one is going over the really old Marxists. We're talking, like, as Angela mentioned, Kautsky, Bernstein, Labrioli or Labriola, Rosa Luxemburg, some other fuckers, Lenin. Doesn't really talk about Trotsky.
No, Trotsky which is interesting.
Doesn't talk about Stalin or Mao either, which is also interesting. But then chapter two, talking about Gramsci. They have bones to pick with Gramsci as well, but they also have like his concepts. They just think he didn't go far enough with them. And so then chapter three is them building their own vocabulary and their reasoning for why the subject is not sutured, which for half of the book I thought meant cut open.
Same.
But it means closed. So that changed things once I was like, okay, so we're not arguing for a closed subject. We're arguing for an open subject, a non, like, universal subject. Okay. It's starting to come together now. But they have a couple really important definitions that they establish in chapter three that then they leverage in chapter four in combination with a lot of reviewing 20th century history to make sense of various class and race and gender and other forms of struggle that occurred in that time, including the neoconservative backlash of the late 70s and onwards.
Yeah, which, so though, like, chapter four I really enjoy. I kind of wish that was like its own book in its own way, you know, just kind of them going through like, okay, so we're going to apply these things and like do like a deep dive and certain, you know, I guess flashpoints of like political, you know,
struggle
and just other historical parts. Cause I think that would have helped a bit more in terms of my understanding, but granted, I'm just one person who says, hey, can you please do your book in a different way? Which, you know,
more examples for the layperson.
Yeah,
please.
Yeah. I think it's, this book also kind of told me like, yeah, saying, hey, read theory is very incomplete.
It's a very loaded statement.
Yeah, it's a very loaded statement because, you know, we've read three or four books and some of them are, you can, like,
I'd say we've read more than three or four.
Okay, maybe five, six.
Yeah.
Maybe around 10-ish,
I guess. How to Blow
Up
a Pipeline. I'd even count, like, Braiding Sweetgrass's theory.
Yeah, in a way. But that's, yeah. In a way, yeah, I think that's, like, theory. But in terms of, like, when people say, hey, go read theory, they really do mean, hey, please go read Lenin. Hey, go read, you know, Marx. Go
Engels.
Read Engels. Go do all that. And
hey, maybe even some Stalin.
Yeah, some Stalin. Maybe
some Mao.
Yeah. And, you know, depending on what circles you're in. But, like, at the same time, some of this stuff is kind of like, I don't like to like venerate the old, because after a point, like, it's just fucking, like, it's just wrong. Not wrong, but, you know, it just kind of, it's out of date. It doesn't really apply to, you know, contemporary / modern times. So kind of having a pedestal for a lot of the old works is just kind of, I think, would hold a lot of people back. So kind of interrogating this through postmodern, but like the problem with reading this book is that I just don't have the language to really understand this type of stuff. And it's kind of frustrating because I get some of the, like, their ideas, but at the same time, I'm just like, am I interpreting this point correctly? And unfortunately, I didn't get, I, Jimmy, you brought found somebody who had like a critique of them, and I unfortunately just didn't get a chance to read it. But
me neither.
But like, it would be nice to read that critique, and then but it would be nice if I can understand this book a bit better, and I can read the critique so I can understand why there's an issue with it.
I would be, you know, not to be like, oh, my newest toy is the best thing ever, but having just finished this and having, you know, been born after it was written and experienced the like really the last 20 or so years as someone old enough to understand what's going on politically, though, I mean, I have definitely come to a deeper understanding, I'd say, probably in the past 10 years. I can't see what criticisms could be levied against this book.
Right.
Maybe potentially against their interpretations of some of the older books that they're saying are missing, are misstepping. But as far as like their, what they end on and the way that they have structured their philosophy, I don't see, unless someone is like arguing, actually there is a completely sutured like subject and like here's how and why, which like just from personal experience, I cannot see how that can be possible.
Right. And I think the based on like the paragraph of the Wikipedia, like what the critique was going to be about, it was just like, hey, I don't think you interpreted this like major aspect correctly, which, you know, sometimes it kind of felt like a gotcha, you know, like, ah, your one thing is wrong, so that means everything else is mm-hmm. like wrong. But that seemed to be like the only one, as far as I'm, you know, as we're aware.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see, yeah, if, you know, interpretation of the works are incorrect, that's how it is. And, you know, that has happened. Like, Bernstein, that whole shit is interpreted incorrectly. And, that, yeah. and like, that's how he got to his conclusion. So. Yeah.
Now, if there is an incorrect interpretation, I still don't think it changes the end result. I mean, the end result rings true like a freaking bell to me.
Yeah.
And so you want to talk what the end result is? Well, actually, before we do that, should we give some definitions?
That's probably a good idea.
So we're going to link to a video that I found on YouTube that goes over these definitions more in depth. I'm just going to read these out to you. They're not going to make fucking sense. But I'm going to read these out to you, and then we're going to talk about Chapter 4, where things might start to make a bit more sense with respect to these definitions. So, in Chapter 3, they lay out the following. Quote, in the context of this discussion, we will call articulation any practice establishing a relation among elements such that their identity is modified as a result of the articulatory practice. The structured totality resulting from the articulatory practice we will call discourse. The differential positions, insofar as they appear articulated within a discourse, we will call moments. By contrast, we will call element any difference that is not discursively articulated. So these are the definitions that they then go on to leverage to build the rest of their view of radical democracy and of hegemony.
Right.
And they did not make sense to me when I read them there. They did not make sense to me really. I mean, they started to as I continued on through Chapter 3. But Chapter 4 is where it clicks together. So let's get into it.
Yeah.
So, what was your impression of Chapter 4? Like, let's really dive into what you got out of it.
So, Chapter 4, as I mentioned, is one talking... So, it kind of starts off talking about pre-World War II, and the, like, the pretty much because society got blown up with, like, World War I, just kind of the rewriting and rethinking of how social structures are and political structures are. And then pretty much post-World War II, there is the kind of, well, actually, even, like, before World War II, like, even happened, just kind of, like, oh, this whole hope of, like, yeah, we're going to restructure everything kind of, you know, fascism fucking came up. Yeah. So, and then post-World War II and the 60s happens. So a lot of the political, a lot of folks, like, ethnic and sexual minorities had kind of a more, like, hey, I need, you know, we're piece of the pie type situation. So, and then kind of the backlash from that. And also, as I mentioned, the unreality type shit going on with the, like, welfare state, the destruction of the social safety net and things like that. And then it talks about how can we go from this neoliberal, neoconservative, unreality type situation to this new radical, like, democracy. Mm-hmm. And kind of what I got from it, like, the last bit, which after a point kind of became road salad to me just because I was, like, reading, and then I was just, like, checking the time to make sure I, like, get everything like finished.
Yep. By the way, readers, we both finished within, like, maybe a half an hour of, yeah, like, getting together to begin to start to record.
Yeah, it's sort of a mess, so we apologize, but this is
we what, do not apologize. Yeah,
okay, fine, fair enough, Jimmy.
You will take your slop.
There you go. So the last bit about, like, okay, how can we go from our current point here to having a, like, pretty much including all the, you know, differences that everybody has, you know, towards political, social, and everything into this new democracy, and one, not doing the falling into, like, the utopia thought, mm, exactly, but, mm, like, it's pretty much saying, hey, it's nice to have that imagination, like, trying to get there, but, like, don't think of that as, like,
the immediate
except, yeah. So it's just kind of like, hey, we need to make sure we're carrying everybody through to the next step of, like, our new, like, democracy, and also, like, kind of keep to the values of, like, okay, if we're saying, you know, liberty, equality, all this other stuff, we need to, like, make sure we fucking do that and not do this, like, half-measure bullshit. And then...
No more half-measures, yeah, Walter.
Yeah, no more half-measures. And then, essentially just try to, like, carry through. But then also, not fall into totalitarianism, by... I'm trying to recall what they, like, what was their kind of, there's, like, a step there where they're like, yeah, try not to do this step, otherwise you're just going to kind of fall back onto that.
I think that had to do with the like, sliding scale between liberalism and democracy that they were working with.
Yeah. So, like, don't fall into that, but so essentially, you know, just keep the imagination going and, like, make that pretty much trying to make a goal, in which that everybody can kind of, like, buy into, mm-hmm, and have everybody, like, okay, yeah, if we're all succeeding together, we can all do that. And also making sure everyone has, like, a, like, say in the democracy, mm-hmm, pretty much, like, making sure people are involved and don't fall into, like, the apathy that we currently have. So, yeah, I don't know if that probably got, like, I don't know, probably us 50% of the way there in terms of chapter 4.
Sure. So here's what I got out of it. So they, in chapter 3, they're starting to work on hegemony, and they also get rid of the sutured subject.
Right.
Which means that we don't have, like, the there's no a priori, like, this is how history goes. So historical materialism, unfortunately, is out. But then two, sorry, listeners, So two, as a result of not having a sutured subject, we start to realize that we can have different subject positions. So you do have workers as a subject position, but even then within workers, there's different kinds of workers, people coming from different backgrounds, people of different ages, people of different sexes, genders, races, what have you. So you cannot like necessarily speak to like worker struggle and encapsulate all of the things that need to be addressed for all of these workers in that one articulation. So then what they begin to talk about is how to think about the social and how to think about democracy, because so much of Marxism has viewed the, since the worker was the focus, they threw everything else away. I mean, they didn't claim to, but they really did. So from there, they bring up a concept of equivalence. So because all of these different social practices, in chapter four, they spend a good deal of time talking about different formulations of maybe different stages of oppression.
Yes.
There being initially subordination, where there is a obvious difference in position and potentially power, but because there is not an external observer, an external object that makes clear whether this difference is oppression or not, things just carry on. So like the example is like the position that women were in before. You could argue, depending on like how much history you've read, I mean, who knows how much history they had access to, but like they pointed to like Mary Wollstonecraft's first book on feminism being like the point at which the ideas from the French Revolution are incorporated into what then became the feminist sphere, which allowed for the articulation of the feminist struggle, which previously couldn't exist because there wasn't this awareness that anything was supposed to be any different. Which you could argue for or against, depending on how much history
because,
you're aware of.
Like, as you read The Caliban and the Witch,
mm-hmm.
a lot, like, and also as we're studying more or like understanding more like medieval like history or any of that, there's a lot of interesting kind of like some parts will be like progressive in terms of just like what women can or cannot do mm-hmm. during the time. And I really, yeah, it depends where, you know, culturally and a bunch of other stuff. So it wasn't just like, yeah, so for 1400 years, women were all like oppressed. It,
yeah.
Like, it really super varied
yeah.
in different areas. I guess you could argue that Wollstonecraft's book was like probably quote unquote more like the modern feminism or like the start of maybe
yeah.
like proto modern feminism, you know, in a way.
I think the argument there is that because like previously in like the medieval period, much of like your social position was believed and enforced based around the idea of like, well, this is how God wanted things to be, and God in turn has empowered like the divine right of kings, blah
right.
blah blah. So because then with the explosion of democracy onto the scene, we then get the positioning of rights not from, say, God, but from like internal to people themselves.
Yeah.
So which then allows for that like external view of the subordination to transform from subordination to oppression. So that is the idea that they're playing with, which they then use to look at how the women's movement developed and how the civil rights movement developed, and how they don't mention this one, but the indigenous rights movement developed, the ecological rights movement developed, etc. So there's that going on. And because all of these subjects have different non-sutured, non-complete subject positions, they're all essentially fighting their own battles. And sometimes people are fighting multiple battles, depending on how many subject positions they may hold.
Right. So, like, for instance, in the civil rights movement, you have some folks who were just trying to be capitalists. They just wanted to be part of the white establishment. They want to have, you know, their business not get fucked up. And you have other people who were being anti-capitalist, who were just like, no, the white supremacist system has not served us, and we just need to destroy it. You have other folks who are just like, hey, I just want to fucking work. Like, they're not owners. They're just like, I want to be able to make a living wage.
Yeah.
And being discriminated against doesn't allow me to do that as part of this, you know, the American dream during like the 1950s. So, like, and feminism is like the same way, too, where a lot of them are just like, hey, I want to be able to just divorce my fucking husband. Or I want to have legal recourse to sue my husband, or like be able to take the children away from like an abusive relationship, like all this other shit. So, like, there's like different lanes that kind of like develop within these like civil rights movements.
It's like the philosophical underpinnings of intersectionality,
right?
But instead of just being like, yes, people have different forms of oppression that they experience, it instead is saying, okay, well, yes, you have different forms of oppression that you experience. Now, how do we go about developing the language to articulate a new hegemony that allows us to create equivalences between these different forms of oppression so that we can work together to address potentially all of them rather than struggling separately?
Right.
And it also, so this reminded me of something. Do you know the, I think it's Sojourner Truth, the Ain't I a Woman speech?
Yes.
Yes. That is like a very early example of exactly this. The differences in subject position and trying to build equivalence between them, though she, I don't think, was successful in even though that was a very powerful speech, but overall did not create a movement at the time for addressing Black women's issues in the same way that women's issues were being addressed at the time.
Yeah, because I think, I forgot what book we were reading, and maybe I read this in an article, but the, like, 18, when emancipation, women's suffrage, and they had a bunch of, like, conventions and things like that. And
like
1890s. And so some folks were like, hey, what about the Black women? And a lot of women were just like, well, we might just address that later. And some people were like, you don't have my support because you're just not doing this thing right now. And I also want to mention, like, in this book they do say, like, the failure of the structure of using class as kind of the superstructure doesn't address, you know, racism, sexism, and other things like that, which is nice to finally have it called out. Like, you know, we've both said this, like, it doesn't really address these things, or we've definitely read, you know, that type of stuff. So it's just nice to, like, oh yeah, no, like, it doesn't do that. Like, okay.
And this book actually goes so far as to say, like, not only does it not address these, but, like, because Marxism is only looking at class and it leaves these other subject positions essentially to struggle on their own, that means that they can be articulated in a number of different ways, whether that's like a conservative view, a liberal view, a socialist view, a fascist view. I mean, we're both very aware of ecofascism being a thing.
Yeah.
But then there's also eco-libertarianism. Like, and libertarianism in this case being like libertarian socialism, the original meaning of libertarianism, not the don't tread on me daddy libertarianism.
Yeah. The we should have child slavery back again libertarianism.
Yes. Yes. Child harem slavery.
Yeah.
My God. Anyway, so all of this to say that they're billing all of these concepts, they're talking about all of these things in the context of things that we do have historical knowledge of, and we can see how these things track with what they're building. And so the goal of what they're trying to discuss is that the left cannot just organize around class. The left needs to, one, create equivalences between class, race, sex, ecological rights, indigenous rights, disabled rights, gender rights, and create a reality, a framework, a hegemony to argue and to fight for these things, not just against oppression, but also articulating a positive view of where to go, which is the hardest part of all of this, which is where they get into radical democracy. And I do not think they do enough to, and I understand why they don't, because radical democracy is always going to take different forms depending on where you are and what time you are. And that is also why I think, even if this book may have gotten like one or two things wrong in interpretations of things, like this last chapter is both pretty solid and also pretty vague.
Yes.
Because they do not articulate like how to go about this. And they, in fact, go so far as to prove towards the end of it that they cannot articulate some concrete way this can be done everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why, that since you said that, I understand a little bit better, like, why we don't, there's not just some utopia type thing. Like, right, they're not like, yeah, we're going to, like, describe a utopia. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just, like, that's something to strive for, and that's, like, nice, but try not to, like, that shouldn't be the thing we, like, fall back on. And, you know, it really does suck not getting some type of instruction. Like, they don't even say, like, yeah, do a revolution. Yeah, no. You should, you know, or do reform, or yeah, you should do anything. There's, like, try to develop a framework or something to strive towards to get everybody kind of on board to do.
Yeah.
And, like, even, granted, you know, anti-vaxxers, whatever, the COVID vaccine, like, we got everybody on board to go and fund to go do the thing, right, for the most part. I'm just saying, like, it is pretty crazy. Like, I know mRNA studies have been done for, like, 10 to 15 years, yeah. Like, things like that, but the fact is, like, hey, we had this technology kind of ready to go, in mm-hmm. a sense, and everybody, for the most part, we're all on board of getting the vaccine out, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, when we put our fucking mind to one thing, we can kind of go and complete it.
Yeah. Side note, while we were both saying, for the most part, there's this really great video that is, like, a 3-hour takedown of the bell curve, but whenever they are discussing, like, contents of the book of the bell curve, there's, like, all of these, like, prescriptions about, like, IQ and blah, 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 blah. And whenever in the text the author writes the word mostly and they're reading this aloud, the person who's making this video is, like, reading in their normal voice to, like, read the quote. And then when the word mostly comes in, it's a child's voice that's like, mostly. And whenever we were like, for the most part, it's like, mostly. And I don't know. Anyway, brainworms. I have brainworms.
It's fine. look, my partner and I, when we go, it's been a while, we go, it's been a while. All the time. So
it's been a while.
Yeah. That's.
Stained.
Yeah.
Was that Stained?
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. I think he's a chud.
Probably, to be quite honest, a lot of early 2000s Brocker, that's not a surprise, especially if they've just been irrelevant for a while. It's very easy to fall down there. So
yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so like, and it definitely, so it feels like that ending is like, how do we get to communism? Well, it depends on your material conditions, but just expand it.
Yes.
Which feels comfortable, because I'm used to thinking about how do we get to communism? Well, it depends on your material conditions as being the answer with no further elaboration. And I'm like, okay, yeah, so we're just, it's intersectional material conditions now. But not only that, also it now also has to be the material conditions for establishing that connection.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that vagueness, because yeah, so this book I think was written like 1982 and 85. Then 85, and then they kind of did, I think they added the introduction, I want to say like 20 years later or something, I don't know, they kind of republished and then added a preface and all this other stuff. So they're like, yeah, we came back out with this book because things changed. And yeah, that's the thing, things changed to where like, oh yeah, in the 80s things were like not looking fucking great, and then now going through the 90s of quote-unquote prosperity to the 2000s of interesting nihilism plus other shit going on, you know, and then to 2010s and beyond. So it's just kind of like
temporary economic global collapse.
Yeah.
Temporary. Mostly.
But, you know, there's kind of, I do enjoy that, because as I've kind of rallied and said, like, we need to be way the fuck more creative and stop really relying on like, oh, okay, well, you know, Lenin said this, and Gramsci said this, and all these people said this. I'm like, that's fucking cool, but, like, you don't understand. Russia was fucking, like, it was a, we're not Russia in 1910, okay? Yeah. That is not us, and it will never will be, like, it doesn't even matter if for some fucking reason we got nuked. It doesn't fucking matter. We never will get to, like, that part of history, and that also isn't part of our, like, American history.
Yeah.
And also the other thing is, you already mentioned it, different places are going to have different cultural things around that type of stuff. So, like, you know, the things with, like, the communist aesthetic, I get a little weird about when Americans do it, because I'm like, man, a bunch of your Eastern European folks are going to be like, that's pretty fucked, my guy. It's going to be like a different context for them, you know, so.
Duh, comrade.
There you go. So it's like, I almost wonder, like, we need to shed, like, that. Like, you can understand that history. It's really good to fucking understand that. But we need to, like, stop keeping symbolism from that time to actually be able to move forward and say, hey, we're, like, this is the thing. This is what we're trying to strive for. You should be able, like, I should be able to convince you to come along, right? Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think really at this point the only purpose in getting a better understanding of what happened in the USSR, what happened in Cuba, what happened in Vietnam, what happened in China, what happened in Burkina Faso, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is solely to be able to disarm people when discussing the potential of moving forward here and now.
Yeah.
Because we cannot... Any recreation of these things in a different place, in a different time, with different material conditions, at most, is just going to be LARPing.
Yes.
And really the only way forward to actual socialism and actual radical democracy. Because another thing that they drop in here, and they do drop a couple times throughout the book, like, hey, we want socialism, we want the abolishment of capital. But a really great line that they drop is, socialism is going to be a component of radical democracy, not the other way around.
Right.
Which, like, right now, like, I've done some like reading of like how China works currently. I'm not an expert. I'm not even a novice, but right now they are leveraging capitalism to try and work towards socialism. They have a lot of democracy in the form of, like, you know, that argument of, like, oh, well, if, you know, we would only need like 7 levels of like legislative bodies for everyone to be involved at one point or another. Functionally, China does that.
Okay.
Like, you have like basically what we would think of as like county government. Some of those then report to like a state or regional government. Some of those then report to, like, you would think of like mid-Atlantic government, and then from there like to national. But having, you know, there are women there, there are some minorities there, there are a lot of minority groups in China. China's fucking huge.
Yes.
It's still mostly Han. It's still mostly men.
Yeah.
So radical democracy, I do think, needs to be the first and foremost thing. And socialism is a part of it.
Yeah. And I guess, like, maybe kind of a good... Granted, you know, with our two-party system, like, Bernie was kind of trying to do that. Like, trying to push, you know, healthcare as the first forefront.
Yeah.
Trying to, you know, cancel student debt. Like, I'm trying to think of other, yeah, like, programs. He was, like, a broad, you know, social, like, goods type situation.
Yeah.
Granted, you know, yeah, you're still working in DNC, their fucking rule set. You're still...
And definitely don't look at his international policies.
Oh, yes. So...
Side note, listeners. Definitely don't look at who got arrested in front of whomever's office, like, 2 days ago for asking to the end for him to stop supporting military, like, funding for Ukraine. Wherever you stand on that, like, those protesters just wanted an end to the bloodshed, and someone had them arrested.
Yeah, yeah. And then somehow they managed to get pictures with MTG, and that's really...
That's sus as fuck, too.
It's not... Whole point is, a lot of people look really fucking bad.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, all around.
Not a great situation. Anyway, so, like... Yeah, like, he was trying to do that, but you're still playing to that DNC fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
So, like, how, like, realistically, okay, so let's just focus on America, because, you know, that's where we are. And two, I'm not going to fucking not speak to anybody else. I would be ignorant as hell, and also very Western chauvinistic as hell. So, realistically, it would probably be making, oh boy, see it. I am already running into several problems here. So most people say, ah, yes, make a third party. Now, the problem is, in America, culturally, third parties are a bunch of fucking jokes. They're with, they always team up with weird-ass people with weird-ass policies, such as the aforementioned libertarians with their child harem slavery thing.
Or they're, like, functionally psyops, like, no labels, where it's like, oh, we're gonna run the neither left nor right, and then primarily fund Republicans,
right? Or some reason have, you know, ties back to Putin and other just weird shit, like, maybe
Jill
not
Stein.
Not like, yeah, she's probably not with him, but it's just like, bro, you took some fucking money from him to go hang out, like, yeah, maybe they're not funding you directly, but it's just getting a picture of that
weird
shit
look.
This is bad.
Bad luck.
So, generally, that's why Bernie just didn't run as a fucking, you know, third party or anything, because it's just a fucking joke. So, like, how do we make the third party not a fucking joke? And most people say, get a fucking billionaire funding, which is just already a non-starter.
Honestly, it's, I mean, the Black Panthers were doing it right in the 60s. We need dual power. We need to build structures outside of the existing political structures, and in doing so, I mean, that would probably bring down the hammer in a similar way that it brought down the hammer on the Black Panther Party, but that was the way to do it. Like, the only way to guarantee or, like, yeah, yeah. Except it can't just be about the economic and political rights of black men. It has to be black men, black women, white men, disabled people, indigenous people. I'm just going to throw out BIPOC to cover everybody.
Right.
People of different genders, people of different sexualities, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, building that is going to be the struggle of a lifetime.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, like, funnily enough, the United States will leave you the fuck alone if you just go make a compound off somewhere.
This is true.
They, as long as you're not having stalking, that's the problem, is when you start having arms and start doing stupid shit with, like, I don't know, probably shooting a Fed, which is,
yeah,
that's where things go horribly wrong.
So there's that. There's also, they feel that they have control of the social sphere.
Right.
So, like, even if you are, say, exercising your rights in the modern day, the way they're understood as far as they constitutionally are, which, given the Supreme Court that we currently have, who the fuck knows what rights we even truly have anymore or will have in a year or two. But it, if you're building dual power in, like, a compound somewhere in the middle of fucking nowhere, I don't know. Like, as a base, yes. But to have influence over the social spaces and to build dual power and to build radical democracy, you do have to go to the people.
Right.
Which then does expose you to the state.
Right.
Though, I will say, this, as this book points out, the state is not all bad.
Right. It does provide
protections against the social when the social is reactionary.
Yeah. So, I guess the whole plan is to, I guess, take over an entire state.
Ooh. We can do like the libertarians in New Hampshire in the 90s and early 1000s and do the Free State Project, except not fucking gross.
Yeah, exactly. Just get an area. The thing is with America is that it's so fucking huge and so many different states and even like coasts and not coasts have very specific cultural things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is very difficult to kind of have a one like type of movement. Like, it can't, it's just, and also there's sprawl, there's just a lot of just problems here. But I guess if you start off a small enough area, it, you can start kind of making some progress. That's
should
just...
we move to Liechtenstein? It's real small.
Oh.
It's real small. Or Rome. We take over Rome. It's technically not a part of Italy.
But Rome, isn't Rome sinking? Or
no, that's okay. Venice.
That's Venice.
Rome is in the middle of Italy.
Okay, I think, yeah, I think we can do it.
They have good wine.
They do have, I'm right. Okay, that's our plan. We're going to take over Rome, get all the wine supply. That's our, you know, export.
We are going to bring radical democracy to Rome.
Yeah, kick out the, I almost said kick out the Pope, but I'm just.
I almost feel like Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton when I'm like, we're bringing democracy to Rome.
Oh, I was a fool. I forgot. This is our tagline for this new party. We should say we're bringing democracy to the United States. And then everyone's like, oh, of course. And just give us billions of dollars of funding and drones.
Yeah.
Like, ah.
There we go.
There we go.
There we go. And then we can hang the Pope in the street like they did with Gaddafi.
Yes. Oh, man. So.
Did they hang Gaddafi? They hung Mussolini.
They did.
I know that.
Yeah, Gaddafi got dragged around the street.
That's right. We're going to drag the Pope through the street in Minecraft. This is not actionable. These are jokes. All right. Are they?
Yes, they're jokes.
They're jokes? Okay, yeah. Cool. Just checking.
Oh my goodness. But, yeah, there's the... It's always weird what they... It's not weird, actually. It's pretty obvious. If you're a white person, you kind of get left alone with your fucking compound. Like, you know, yeah. Scientology has Clearwater as yeah. the entire... That's Scientology
yeah.
city right there. Yeah. They don't fuck with it because even though they're not paying any taxes or doing anything...
I mean, that's just like a Florida thing to not
that's
pay
true,
taxes.
That's true, that's true. Yeah, maybe we should just take over Florida. I think that'd be pretty easy.
Ooh. And have to deal with climate change?
Look,
that's
climate change
Rome.
Is for everybody, so...
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But, I mean, having... Water is a base, like, level
okay,
thing.
Okay, fair. All right.
And they are going to have too much water, and it's going to be too salty.
Okay, all right. So we don't take... Okay, Florida out and back on the Rome 2025 plan. Got it.
Either that or Idaho. But there's way too many neo-Nazis there.
There
already.
Are a lot of neo-Nazis there, and they do have a lot of corn. Wait,
you're thinking Iowa.
I am, shit.
Idaho's potatoes.
Potatoes.
They do have some corn, but it is mostly potatoes.
Okay.
Having driven through Idaho, honestly, having driven through North Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho, Idaho is the most boring.
Oh, okay. All right, good to know.
The other three, actually pretty to look at. Idaho's just fucking potatoes.
Amazing.
Boring as shit.
Yeah. If you're in the other cult place is Nexium. You know, they had their mm-hmm. little town that just cut off your cellular
network.
Was
that in New York? Where was that?
Oh, yeah. That was, yeah, upstate, like, New York. Yeah. I just remember a reporter was going there, and they were, like, instantly I walked, like, I got dropped off on the train, or dropped off from the train, or maybe it was a bus, but I think it was a train.
Sure.
And no cell signal. And
yeah,
yeah, it was, he was like, I am having some really bad fucking vibes right now. It's just like, yeah. So, but I think they finally caught the guy and all this other stuff, but I don't know what happened to that town. Like, is it still there? Did they just like abandon it? Like, who the fuck knows? But yeah, as long as you're not doing anything with guns or trying to, allow or try or, eminent domain shit trying to prevent them from getting anything, then they kind of just leave you alone.
Yeah. But building a compound is one thing.
Yes.
But it's not going to reach the people to build a new hegemonic structure.
True.
Which we would have to do. We would have to be in person because, unfortunately, you can't just, like... If we had the internet of, like, the late 90s, early 1000s, where things were... There were a lot of websites, yes. But you could build something and attract people to it and have it be outside of, like, capital power structures.
Right.
There are still things like that. Has anybody heard of them?
Exactly.
I've heard of them because I've sought them out, but when you have reporting on, like, oh, there's a revolt against Twitter and people are leaving for all these other social platforms, not a mention.
Right.
Not a mention of these actually radical, like, free, open source, anyone can run it, anyone can join it, spaces. It is other capitalist ventures. So, we do, unfortunately, this cannot be something where, like, we have a compound and we just do everything on the web until, like, everyone decides to come join our compound.
Yeah.
We have to go to the people.
And that means we're going to essentially take over the...
Clearwater, Florida.
Clearwater, Florida. Yep. No, actually, that means we're going to take over a student council at the school, because apparently that controls everything.
Yes.
So all they got to do is just, you know, coup a student council, you know.
Was it the board of, what are they called? The Like, they're not student councils, but like the Board of Education?
Like PTA?
Not the PTA. Oh. The Board of Education.
Okay.
Because the PTA is like parents bothering the Board of Education and doing fundraising for like stuff for their school. But the Board of Education has like a say, not just over like the one school, but all the schools in a particular area. Yes.
Okay. Well,
start there
and then kick out the Matt Walshes of there who keep bothering people. And then eventually
that is going to be the biggest fucking struggle session though. Cause like they already think they're communists. And then if we rock up and we're like, we're here specifically to foment a new form of radical democracy for the purpose of creating essentially Trotsky's permanent revolution, but not through the angle of just class, but through the angle of all forms of oppression, Matt Walsh is not going to be happy.
He won't, which is fine, whatever. Fuck that guy. But
yes, agreed.
Yeah, I guess folks can try to play into the like DNC and try to like push them to further to the left or whatever, but it doesn't like, yeah, it's not a bad thing to try to do, especially like locally. A lot of the problem with like a lot of these like third party fucks is that they like to just be like, we're on the national stage, and a lot of it is just a bunch of narcissism that gets fully displayed.
And getting a book deal.
Yeah, of course, and getting a book deal. And, you know, I think there could be a bit more, a little bit more of a, like a kind of like, people will be less skeptical if you're like, hey, I'm part, you know, I have my D by my name, but like, I am trying to do these different ideas and, you know, try, and especially like locally. And if you're known local, you know, as a community person, instead of just like, here's this fucking random lawyer or whatever that pops up and they had a book and that went through their struggles or whatever, which is fine for some people, but you know, that always kind of, you know, I'm just like, where the fuck did you come from?
Are you not a fan of The Gorilla Mindset by Mike Cernovich?
Jesus Christ. What is The Gorilla Mindset?
Don't fucking
yeah, that's
ask.
Exactly. So, but yeah, I think what I there's obviously a base of online folks, online leftists who do give a shit, but it is trying to mobilize that into shaping like local politics is just very fucking difficult to kind of do, because as of right now, there's no one saying, hey, buddy, or like 20-some-year-old, like voting is worth it because you're going to see direct like...
Yeah.
thing with this, and your friends will too. That is yeah. like
the other thing is that like we can't just suggest that politics as it currently exists is the only answer, because like
right.
radical democracy has to be introduced into like all aspects of the social. So that means like this is a really lame example, but like right now we have a movie night that we do usually once a month, and we all vote, and getting people to care about voting is really hard, but we do it and it happens, and nobody can say like I was oppressed unless they decide not to vote and then get upset because they were like, I can do any night, and then they can't make the night that we choose because they didn't vote.
Yeah.
Not a call out, because they're not going to listen to this episode. Anyway, but so democracy, radical democracy has to come to all aspects of the social. It can't just be, because like the political is a part of the social, but it's
right.
not the only part. Like families are part of the social. Friends are part of the social. Church groups are a part of the social. Recreational sports groups are a part of the social. Bars and movie theaters are a part of the social. Like, And while they are like some part of capital, obviously, because they're owned by people, assuming that we are able to remove the, because something else that is brought up in this in the end of chapter four is like, it is not sufficient to bring democracy to the workplace, because there is in the workers themselves having democratic control of the means of production that does not take into account how what they produce, how they produce it, and how it is distributed and how it is consumed. None of those things are available to be voted on by those who are impacted by them.
Right.
So it is not just sufficient to have like, oh, the bar is owned by the workers of the bar. The bar also needs to be owned by the patrons of the bar and the neighbors of the bar and the town, because it does have impacts outside of the bar. And even inside of the bar has impacts not just on who is working behind the bar, but who is ordering in front of the bar.
Right. And I don't, like, for some people, that might sound, wow, I have to be, that sounds really messy, or it could be fucking annoying to, like, think of, like, these different connections between folks, but, like, that is, oh boy, I get to say, that's what living in society
yes.
is.
Yes. And the goal is for no one to have a job, but for everyone to constantly be voting on things. Code will be developed by committee.
Oh boy.
All apps will be developed both with input from the developers and those that they are developed from or developed for.
The thing is, in a way, we do some of that, like, mm-hmm. right now, for instance, you know, I work for a software engineering company, and one of the big things as part of some folks' jobs is to do these surveys of like, hey, how, or like provide surveys or provide feedback or allow for feedback to be like collected so that they can improve the product.
Sure.
And so that they, and then also interpret this feedback and then provide it in a useful manner for the developers to actually like try to code that. So in a very long ass way, it is kind of by committee to do so.
Sure.
You know, like, so
we do just need to remove the capital aspect then.
Right. Like, like the thing is, like, yeah, we already kind of do that. That's the whole point of fucking surveys that, like, these fucking companies, like, do annoy you with. Like, they, like, in some ways.
The problem is, though, mm-hmm. that the sort of individuals who take those surveys are not doing it from a civic duty.
Correct. They are trying to do it from their own, like, hi, I'm interacting with your product this way, and I don't like it. And then somebody else be like, well, I did like it that way. And so, depending on how things go, it could change it to, for the worse, or, you know, in a, but the thing is that, I mean, I feel like the folks who are developing it are, should be able to discern, like, is that useful or not useful? Like, they should be, have some, obviously a say, right. Into like, oh yeah, this person or these groups are a bunch of fucking idiots. So I'm not going to do that. Right. Like to not, to make the toggle a switch or whatever.
But we need at least a 4-hour struggle session on the floor of the legislative body that constitutes whatever app that it is that it is about to truly get at the heart of that rather than just a survey.
Fair. Yes. However, who would come to the 4-hour struggle session? Everybody? We're going to live stream it?
Yes.
Okay. And then you just have Twitch chatters?
Yes.
Just... okay.
Oh my god, I can't wait until Radical Democracy has Twitch chat. I shared a meme to our group chat recently, and it, you know, it does kind of hit at this in an interesting way, though I don't think it was necessarily commenting on the concept of like Radical Democracy, but it looked like Twitch chat, but it was the very end of the Truman Show as he's walking up the stairs to leave the set. And I think in an ideal someone in your future, that could be a way of engaging in these deliberative bodies.
Yeah, I mean, make it easy, accessible.
Vote with your pogs.
Yes, vote with your pogs. So
not the 90s pogs.
Not, well, I mean, we can bring it back just for fun. Just a, you know, throwback Thursday for pogs.
Mm.
Okay, do we have anything else?
No more theory from us for a little while. Are, would you consider yourself a Marxist any longer, having read this book?
In terms of...
Did you ever consider yourself a Marxist?
I don't think I really consider myself a Marxist necessarily, okay. So...
Okay.
Yeah.
I've considered myself a Marxist. I don't think I would consider myself a Marxist any longer. I appreciate Marxism, but I would consider myself a post-Marxist at this point.
Okay. Fair enough.
And, you know, it does kind of help to square the circle a bit. Or circle the circle. Take the square and turn it into a circle.
There you go.
Because I have appreciated postmodernism for a while. And postmodernists and Marxists do not get along.
No.
And I really feel like post-Marxism finally brings the two together in a way that is coherent. And it's nice to have like those feuding ideas finally merge.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we're in October, so this is going to be fun trying to also finish this book. So for October, we're doing...
I think we got it.
What?
I think we got it.
Yeah.
We got it.
We're doing Men, Women, and Chainsaws, Gender in the Modern Horror by Carol J. Clover. And then November, Half Earth Socialism by Drew Pendergrass and Troy Vitez.
Going back to Marxism, yeah, now we're doing, post-Marxists.
Yeah. So we'll see how... Well, that'd be kind of fun to kind of compare, you know, post-Marxism with this and see how
just
that kind of...
Just going to be reading it and be like, the superstructure is fake. You're arguing from a unified, sutured subject position. It's amazing. Not valid.
Oh, my goodness. Then December, we're going to do How to Read Lacan by Zizek. We're back to end of the year / beginning of the year.
Zizek. Yeah, don't worry, listeners. This is not modern Zizek. This is 2006 Zizek. So he still is somewhat sane.
Mm. Yes, still somewhat sane. Still, however, sniffing a lot probably by then.
We cannot hear the sniffs through the book, though.
I will probably imagine it a lot.
Yeah. I am forever eating from the trash can of ideology. You know, no matter what he does in the rest of his life, he gave us that. He gave us that one moment.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
And remember, books are good, actually.